the Oldie Magazine recordings. Welcome to the Oldie of the Year 2015, sponsored by Bailey Gifford. Theoldie.co.uk.
I'm excited to be here, particularly excited that Tony Blackburn is here as well. So that, should I be caught short, Tony is ready to step into my shoes. It's all too exciting. I'm very thrilled to be here, and we really should begin. And we do have to rattle through this, because though we make no concessions to it being the Oldie of the Year lunch, we do like to get it finished in time for the snooze. So we will rattle through things a little bit. My name is indeed Giles Brandreth. I'm thrilled, honoured, excited to be here at what is clearly a very happy occasion. That's the best part of it for me. Alexander congratulated me on being here, but I would like to salute him and his team and James, the publisher of The Oldie, on... Yes. One of the real challenges of life, indeed, one of the secrets of being happy, is to be able to cope with change. And I do find that very difficult. A lot of people do, as the years go by, find coping with change difficult. I do. I have to be honest with you, the 21st century is not my natural home. I do not wish to learn another frigging password. You know, it can be a little bit of a nightmare. So what is so good about James and the team is that they have coped with change. And change has rewarded them. Because I'm able to tell you that the subscriptions, this is not just people buying it off the top shelf, well, they can't reach the top shelf anymore, people buying this magazine on subscription has reached an all-time high of 38,681. Yay! So we've saluted them. And now we come to these awards. And basically what happens is I'm going to give you the names of half a dozen people. And when you hear those names, feel free to go berserk. Given the age of some of these people, they may not be hearing an ovation like this again. So it'd be lovely for them to actually go out on a high, you know? Obviously, in some ways, we hope that everybody survives this afternoon, but, you know, James is keen to promote the magazine, so if any of you do feel like, if you're going to go, you know, within the next few days, would you go this afternoon? I mean, I don't want to hurry you on, but it would make a marvellous, marvellous story, you know? I'm sorry if that seems to be in poor taste, but there we are. That's the way it goes. I'm going to give out half a dozen names, and we will go berserk as we hear each one. I will tell you why that person has been nominated. And I will then invite them, if they wish to say a few words, if they know who they are. If they not don't, I've got a crib sheet and I'll help them through any embarrassments. I'll time this quite carefully because one or two of the people who are here to accept an award are not actually in the room at the moment because they've not found their way back from the conveniences. But anyway, we will try to get through this in a good and orderly fashion. We have had some good judges, some remarkable judges. James and Alexander obviously have been on the judging panel, but we brought in some outsiders. One of the most brilliant and beautiful human beings in the world, a novelist. Yes, it's you, darling. I just want you to salute, and she can perhaps stand up and wave at you. She is just so lovely, Jenny Eclair. She's obviously far too young to really be counted an oldie, but she's doing sort of...
She'd like a carer,
and she's really come here doing missionary work, and we're thrilled to see her. As well as her, on the judging panel were Roger Lewis, who can't be with us. Yeah, we love Roger, a kinsman of Jeremy Lewis, who I also should have mentioned, who actually has been running the magazine almost single-handedly for 25 years and now has got some help. But well done him. Roger couldn't be here. He's busy committing suicide and emailing Stephen Fry as we speak. It's quite a problem for Roger because now Stephen's got a husband of his own. So anyway, Craig Brown, who also Roger emails, isn't here. He's not very well. But there we are. No, not seriously ill. Not like some of you, I hope. Anyway, But we have got in our midst the man who has won more BAFTAs than any other person in the history of British entertainment. Judi Dench feels embarrassed in his presence. Would you salute John Lloyd? John, would you like? Now, we got together, the judges, to decide who should be the recipients of these Oldie Awards. Now, hugely prestigious. All sorts of people have won Oldie Awards over the years. We've had a Lady of the Garter, a Knight of the Garter, member of the Royal Family, members of the Companion of Honour, Order of Merit, people with CBEs, KBEs, OBEs, you name it, we have had them. But people regard receiving an Oldie Award as the ultimate accolade. They do. And so this is the moment in their lives, and therefore we took our responsibilities seriously. And we sat down and thought, who are we going to give the awards to this year? And obviously, we immediately thought, well, of course, Nicholas Parsons, June Whitfield, Geoffrey Palmer, but it seems they've all had it before. But welcome, thank you very much indeed for coming along again and remembering where to come to. But they are interesting role models, Nicholas and June particularly, because between them there's about 18 months. But the point is that they are people who are now on the brink of, actually in their 10th decade, and at the height of their powers. I mean, genuinely giving work that is just extraordinary. So we thought we have got to recognise people who are still at the height, but not just snapping the celery and lead in the pencil, but actually up there and doing it. And not just doing it, but somehow making everybody feel better about themselves. So happiness is what we have been looking for. People who can spread happiness in this world. Because there was a time when we didn't expect happiness in this world, we expected in the world to come. You know, life was a veil of tears. You died, you got happiness then. We have happiness now, thanks to the people we are about to honour. And I'm going to do them, if I may, in chronological order of maturity. What is interesting about this contender is that he is winning a prize simply for being alive, because all the other people in his category, well, it's a television program that he was starred in when he was 22, called Dad's Army. You remember this? And the man I'm going to introduce to you played the part of Pike. Yeah. You're guessing who it is, probably because you can see him from where you're sitting. He played the part of Pike at the age of 22, and gradually, over the years, all the other people in Dad's Army have died. He looks quite well to us, but we thought we'd better catch him while he was still with us. It's a good time to have caught him, because a television series that we grew up with and we loved, and that brought us happiness in the way that a slim, trim figure can bring us happiness. Dad's Army brought real joy and happiness, intelligent, broad comedy. Wonderful. And we thought it was irreplaceable, couldn't ever be done again. And now a movie is being made. And we've got great reservations about the movie, but we've seen the cast and we think that might work. The good news is that the man I'm about to introduce, Pike himself, is in the movie, elevated to the rank of Brigadier. Would you please salute an actor who has appeared in Shakespeare, in Restoration comedy, in broad farce, but it will always be in our hearts because he played Pike. Yes, don't tell him, but it is Ian Lavender.
It is a little daunting, and I must start with an apology, I'm afraid, to Alexander and to Giles for nearly being very late and putting the cat amongst the pigeons. We live out in Suffolk, my wife and I, and this morning we set off in the car, and by the time we got to Cambridge, the snow was pretty bad, and we were losing time badly. And so I thought, as the weather cleared just south of Cambridge, I put my foot down on the M11 and speed up a bit. So I did that. And after about 20 miles, as we approached Stansted, I saw those blue lights in the mirror. And we were pulled over, and I was going to be later than ever. I do apologise for any problems I gave you early on. And the policeman got out of the car and he came up and I thought, get this over with quickly so we're not late. And he said, good morning, sir. How are we this morning? I said, fine, thank you very much. I'm fine. And he said, we were going a little fast there, weren't we, sir? And I said, yes, we were going a little fast. He said, do we know how fast we were going, sir? I said, yes, we were going just under 90 miles an hour, I'm afraid. Do we know how fast we should have been going, sir? And I said, yes, we should have been going around about and no more than 70 miles an hour. I said, yes, that's right, isn't it, sir? He said, I recognise you, don't I? I said, yes, probably yes. He said, oh, good heavens. He said, are you all right now? I know you've had your problems with your health. I said, yes, I'm fine, thank you very much. He said, fine. So I said, I'm terribly sorry about this, sir, but I do have to issue you with a ticket, sir. And I said, okay, fine. Yes, fine. And he said, so you're who I think you are, sir? And I said, yes, I am. He said, do we have a reason why we were going so fast, sir? I thought, oh, what can I say? Do I say I don't get an award at the oldies? He wouldn't know what the oldies are. And no, I don't do that. Should I could say going to do a charity. That would be a lie. Don't let's get caught out in a lie. No, don't do that. And I thought, appeal to his humanity, man to man. And forgive me, ladies and those gentlemen who are of a tender disposition. I said, I'm terribly sorry, officer. I said, but I was dying for a shit. And he said, well, sir, you found one. I was sitting at home in the ember months of last year, trying to get over the shock of once more not being in the New Year's honours list. I hadn't been notified by November, so it wasn't going to happen yet again. And I was there doing, seeking solace in the genius crossword, as I always do. I love it. And flop went the post on the, and an envelope opened, and another copy of the oldie fell out on the floor. And I thought, an insurance policy, making sure I get the winter edition. And then the letter from Giles dropped out, saying you've been nominated for an award. What for could it possibly be? I have won one award in my life before. In 1975, we were awarded the joint BBC Television Personality of the Year by the Variety Club. And it took place in a room about this size in those days at Grosvenor House, not in the Grand Room or O2 now. And Arthur looked at it and said, there's not a lot of room up there. I think perhaps just I should go up and get the award. To which John the Measurer said, no, you fucking won't, aren't. We're all going up there and you'll fight for your space just the same as the rest of us. I've treasured that silver heart, I really have. It's been really rather lovely. But when this came out, what could I possibly be being an award for? And the only thing I could think of was that I was going to get an award for being the actor who received most BBC repeat fees last year. And I hope you'll bear that in mind next year, and there are as many repeats as there have been last year. When this came up, I was absolutely knocked out by it. And although that joint personality thingy of 1975 meant an awful lot, and we still have it, and I polish it now and again, this truly, I think, means an awful lot more. And thank you. And I shall be renewing my subscription. Thank you.
Stupid Oldie Boy of the Year. Well done. Congratulations.
My friend Mr. Cryer said he would help me out. So, Barry, what were you going to say?
Don't tell them, Pike. Yeah.
Well, isn't it exciting to be... the last comparable award ceremony that I had the privilege of hosting was at the Russell Hotel, not far from here. I hosted the British Funeral Directors Awards. The recipients weren't nearly so chatty, but it was a marvellous occasion. The main prize was for thinking outside the box. totally true story. Now, we sweep on from that to another survivor of a different kind. We salute Ian for simply surviving. We're now going to salute someone for surviving in a jungle. And What is marvellous about this next individual I'm going to introduce is his career has been hugely distinguished. And he is brilliant. He's been an international correspondent. He's given us the news with authority. He is a documentary filmmaker who deserves to win awards of that kind and will eventually. But he's found a whole new public, a whole generation of people who didn't know that he was alive. Not that they thought he was dead, they just didn't know he'd existed ever. They discovered him down in the jungle. Anton Deck's grandpa, they think of him as. It must be very strange for him suddenly to have millions of people watching him on television when he's been enjoying that audience of several thousand on Radio 4 for so long. It's a curious phenomenon. The truth is, I think people like myself who have been invited, and I know a number of these people in this room have been invited to take part in the Jungle program, we all shied away. Of course, like you, we wanted the money. In our case, it wasn't as much as you got. But nonetheless, we wanted the money, but we didn't have the courage. We thought, no, actually, I don't think I can face the humiliation. I don't think I can face it. And then we read the small print and discovered it was 500 calories a day and that you really were in isolation for 24 hours and that you'd be meeting people who are more famous than you but of whom you have never heard. We all withdrew. But there is one man who said, I don't care. I don't care. 140,000 for starting bids, that'll do me very nicely. Everybody else can mock. I'm going. Putting on his parachute, jumping from the helicopter, descending into the jungle and surviving not one night, not two, not three, not four, but 19 nights in hell down under. Coming back a stone and a half slimmer, 140 grand richer. And the oldie jungle survivor of the year, Michael Burke.
What can I say? This is beyond my wildest dreams, as you might imagine. In fact, in the inexplicable failure of the honours system to recognise my towering talents and manifold contributions to society, it's probably the best I can hope for. Thanks. It's traditional to thank people who got you to where you are. So thanks to my wife, Christine, whose advice was sadly not taken. To my agent, Sue, who got me into this mess by the simple expedient of screwing a large fortune out of ITV. To ITV themselves for rescuing me from the dignified obscurity into which I'd slipped after a lifetime, now I realise sadly wasted in serious broadcasting. ITV has taken me to the heights of contemporary culture, figuratively and literally, stretched over an Australian ravine dressed as a cockatoo, yelling Hankel Pankel at 11 million surprised, but I'm told admiring viewers. It was really my greatest achievement to date. I was not really a fan of reality television when I set out on this, and I'm not a fan now. I rather took the view of the critic who described it as Orwell for dummies, played out in a hamster cage for preening narcissists. Well, that more or less actually summed it all up. They were actually quite pleasant, and the whole event had a certain cachet to it. But the regime, as Giles has said, was a really quite tough one. The hard thing was not the rats. The hard thing was not the cockroaches. The hard thing was not even Edwina Curry. The hard thing was actually working out who the other celebrities were. And I have to say, this ignorance was reciprocated. How can I put this? They weren't obsessive watchers of the news. And when the time finally came for me to be evicted, it was a rather charming scene as I walk out, relieved, across the gantry, and the surviving campmates are somewhere down below, waving farewell in a rather touching manner. Carl Fogarty, the chap who actually won the programme, could be heard very clearly saying, what was it he said he did? And then And then the other, I don't know, it was just such a such an extraordinary thing. They were actually much more pleasant than I thought they would be, most of them. And I looked around when I met them in the jungle, and I thought, well, which one's the vile one? You know, which one is the one who's so odious, so appalling, that everybody in the camp hates them, and the entire nation hates them? And, of course, after a while, it slowly dawned on me that perhaps I was... But then modesty prevailed, and I eventually persuaded myself I'd been recruited to add a bit of tone to proceedings. I failed, but I died trying. Thank you very much.
Jungle Survivor of the Year. Now, our penultimate winner, because we're doing this in chronological order, from March 1929, can't be with us. He is hugely distinguished. I'd love him to have been able to be here, but he was literally snowed in. And given that he was planning to drive himself, that he has Parkinson's disease, that he was born in 1929, and that the car has not actually passed the MOT test... His wife telephoned to say, I have forbidden him to come. So we have not got with us a man who is winning the prize of long-distance runner of the year. And the reason that we've given this to Roger Bannister is not only because last year marked the anniversary of that extraordinary four-minute mile that many of us remember from our early childhood, but because that was just what he did in passing. The fascinating thing about that particular race is he didn't train specially for it, you know. He was still being a doctor during the day and just doing this at weekends, and still he won the race. And when he'd won it the following weekend, he was back, you know, as a locum at the local hospital. And since then, of course, went on and had an extraordinary distinguished medical career, Master of Pembroke College and all the rest of it. So the reason we were giving him the award is it's one thing to achieve something, in 1954, but the truly remarkable oldies are still doing it in 2015. So can we cheer and salute the long-distance runner of the year, Sir Roger Bannister? And now we come to the oldie of the year. And all I'm going to ask you to do is hear me speak two words, seven letters, and then go berserk. I told you that what we were looking for was somebody, people who had given happiness to our lives. And I'm about to present somebody to you who 60 years ago was performing on Top of the Bill, who since then has played in everything from... I remember seeing him in 1971 as Malvolio in Liverpool. Saw him in Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet, in fact, I think he appeared in that. But we know him as somebody who simply has made us laugh, who has lifted our spirits for six decades and is still touring, still playing to capacity. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed lunch. I know you'll enjoy dinner. There's the possibility of breakfast. Would you please salute the oldie of the year, Ken Dobbs?
It's wonderful to be here today. This afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's wonderful, at my age, it's wonderful to be anywhere. So I've been invited to say a few words. Bloody impossible. Well, they say, why? Well, I just enjoy them, that's why. I just enjoy doing it. It's like asking Giles Brandis to give you a potted version of his rise to fame. I'd be a real bloody night for that. Now, I'd like to thank the gaffer, the governor. Thank you much, sir. And the editor and all the staff of the oldie, the powers that be, the management, for inviting me here today, ladies and gentlemen. As I glance around me here, I can see 50 shades of beige. These dues can be quite expensive, I know that. Very, very expensive, all the extras, as the hairdo, the makeover, the nails, the eyebrows, and the ladies look nice as well. Being old, ladies and gentlemen, it's not as whimsical as it should be. How does a man know when he's going old? You start coming downstairs sideways. When you fall out of bed in the morning, everything clicks. Anything that doesn't click doesn't work. When you bend down to fasten your shoelace, you think, now, is there anything else I should be doing while I'm down here? Well, you still chase after girls, yeah. And your wife doesn't mind you chasing after girls. She says our dog chases after cars and he can't drive. Growing older does have its pluses and its minuses. One of the great pluses of being older is the younger generation, like this beautiful girl here. The younger generation, they think you become a very wise old bird, you know. They think you become a guru, a philosopher, and they come to you for advice. And you don't like to let them down, you see. You say, yeah. Well, when things look black, send them to the laundry. And you try to read all the great old proverbs, like you wise words from books. You can lead a horse to water, but a pencil must be led. This is... You read the great philosophers who you admire, W.C. Fields. W.C. Fields said, happiness, he said, happiness. Smile every morning. Get it over with. Well, I myself have become a philosopher. A philosopher. I say to people, do not walk behind me, for I may not want to lead. Do not walk in front of me, for I may not know to follow. Do not walk alongside me. Just bloody leave me alone, will you? Yes. One of the most marvellous things in your growing older is you get little signposts in your head. Signposts that tell you, if you're a family person, when your family start visiting you more often. I mean your close family, you know, the ones you wouldn't lend you a penny. You don't see them from one Christmas to another. Then all of a sudden, they come round to your house every week. That's bloody unnerving, that, you know. And when they come round to your house, they're always looking round, going... Picking all your ornaments up and saying, I saw this last week on Flog It. This. Another one at a signpost in your head tells you, be nice to your children. Because they're the ones who are going to decide which home you're going in. They put you in a home now, when you can't do things for yourself. And if anybody says to you, we're going to put you in a home, don't play about it. Don't be nervous. Don't worry about it. It's very nice. They look after you. And the bread's ready chewed. You can have a different set of teeth every day. Very nice. The Oldie is a wonderful magazine. I've been buying it now since it first... published. This is a lovely occasion, ladies and gentlemen. And being a sort of earning a living, telling jokes and things like that, it is a little bit daunting, actually. I love to laugh. I think that's why I buy the Oldie. I love to laugh. I love the cartoons. I think they're all wonderful. I love the jokes. I love the features. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful... I look forward to it very much. Thank you very much, sir. It's a wonderful... No. I'm not saying that just because I've had a free lunch, but it is a wonderful magazine. And laughter is it's a beautiful gift. I think it's one of the greatest gifts that any human being can possibly have. The gift of having a really good laugh. We're all, some people, alas, lose their chuckle muscle as they grow older, and they don't laugh as easily. Thank God it hasn't happened to me. I had a wonderful... My father was a very funny man. It was through him I sort of learned the knack of telling jokes. I'll try to prove that to you in a minute. But my brother, sister, my mother, my dad used to take us every week down into the centre of Liverpool to a theatre, a variety theatre there, called the Shakespeare Theatre of Varieties. Later on, I went to the Playhouse... And I played Malvolio. I've also liked to play the Liverpool Hamlet. To be or not to be, or what? Doesn't matter. You wouldn't know. If you're not from Liverpool, you wouldn't know what I'm talking about. But yeah, and then I saw some of the great old comics as well, yeah. Great old comics. It was a magical place, this dark room for a little boy of 7 or 8. And suddenly, this curtain goes up and there was a wonderful, wonderful heavenly place was revealed. And these people, ladies would sing and men would juggle and magicians would come on and men in check suits would come on and shout at the audience and they'd laugh. And they were the comedians. And that's what I wanted to be. I said to my dad, I said, Dad, how do you comed? So he started telling me some jokes. And that's really what a comedian's all about, ladies and gentlemen. The most important part of a comedian's toolbox is you, the audience. But you, the audience, the British audiences are all over. It varies from place to place. When I first started, when I became turned professional in 1954, before that, I'd been a bit of a salesman, and I used to keep a note of what I've sold. So it seemed common sense to me to write each joke, a keyword, and how it was, did you get a big laugh, a little laugh, or what? And over the years, I've collected all these notebooks, and I've got a sort of a giggle map of Great Britain. Laughter, to me, it's because I'm a performer. I'm not a writer or an actor. I am a performer. I perform jokes, and to me, I play an audience. You play an audience like you play an instrument. You know where the hot spots are. You know where you can flirt with them. You know where you can cheer them up. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely thing. Yeah. And laughter is like a rainbow. The types of laughter. At the very, very top, there's a laughter, there's a white laughter, the laughter of pure joy. And you can hear that anytime you like. If you just pass a school playground, you'll see little boys and your little children leaping up and down and shouting and laughing for the sheer joy of being alive. It's amazing. It's wonderful. And as you go through the spectrum, the yellow laughter, that's the colour of clowns. Red laughter, the colour of romance. And further down, there's the darker colours. The darker colours of indigo and purple. And even back, that's where you find satire and cynicism. Sort of. I don't do that, you see. I don't do cynicism. I do hooray comedy because that's what I think audiences want to hear. When they pay, that's the greatest compliment anyone can pay, to put hard-earned cash down and say, you know, we want to be entertained by you. So, you know, the best way is to cheer them up. They don't want to hear you doing satire and political and picking the world's sores. They want to be cheered up, so you tell them happiness jokes, you know. Things to cheer people up. It's very difficult for a comedian, of course. It's all right for people like young Giles here. His looks carry him through. But for comedians, we of course, we have to... and that's what I've got this beautiful girl here. Young lady, answer me a question, though. To a young lady, which is most important in a man when they meet him? Is his money or his looks? His looks, it's his looks, and of course it is. But what about those of us who aren't particularly... particularly challenged. I've been doing this now 60 years. 60 years before that, I served my apprenticeship playing the social clubs and cabarets, and it's been wonderful, wonderful. I have to say that I am completely and utterly stage-struck. We in the variety is sometimes called an old-fashioned kind of entertainment. It really means a variety of skills, because each performer is like a little one-man business. Each performer, whether you're a juggler or a magician, is doing the very, very best they can. She can, he can, doing the very to make their little polish, their little jewel of a turn, call it, to make it the best they possibly can. Now, all actors, they're called legitimate. Their kind of theatre is legitimate, which just leaves us in a very, very bad light, actually. We are variety artists, ladies and gentlemen. Our trade is telling jokes, trying to make people laugh. Actually, you can't make anybody laugh. Laughter is inside you. It's inside you. All a comedian does is try and just coax you and wiggle it out. And there's all different kinds of comedians today. People say, has humour changed? There's three questions an interviewer will ask a comedian. When are you going to retire? I think they're hinting, actually. The second one is, where is your favourite theatre? And the third one has comedy changed in the last 50 or 60 years? Well, first of all, retirement, no. I love it so much. Before I hang up my tickling stick, I'll have to be not unable to do it. Second, where's your favourite theatre? It's wherever I'm going to play tomorrow night. Your favourite theatre has to be the one you're doing today or tomorrow. And has humour changed? No. Humour hasn't changed since the days of the Greeks, since the days of the mystery plays, the days of music hall. It's the audiences that have changed. The audiences' expectations. Yeah, that's what's changed over the years. Even on television now, you'll get comedians who will... We don't want bad language and swearing and obscenity, do we? No, we can get that at home. But they're only words, you see. Supposing you substitute another word. For instance, instead of that four-letter word, suppose you said puffin. Oh, puffin, that's a lovely word. You know the little puffins with the little yellow beaks? So there you are, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to, if you insist. Ladies and gentlemen, I think I see quite a lot of you are answering the call of nature. So I'm going to pass over to Mr. Brandreth, because I think he has something to say to me.
I simply got to say, let's all Oldie of the Year. The tragic hilarious Oldie of the Year, Ken Barr.
Thank you very much, Ian. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, clearly the interval has come. We'll be resuming, obviously, in 15 minutes. But the rest of you, congratulations to all our winners. Thank you for being here, and see you in 2016. Well done, everybody. Oldies everywhere.
The Oldie Magazine Recordings. This is a Radio Gorgeous production for The Oldie 2015. TheOldie.co.uk.